Accession number 7396, room number 13.
Colonel Hancock, reel 13. What was your next posting on the winding up of the auxiliary units, Colonel Hancock?
Well, I didn't get a posting for some little time, because I then, you see, the war was into 1945, and the war was showing signs, distinct signs of ending. But I was sent to I don't know what kind of board it was called, but it was to find out what people wanted to do. And this was somewhere in Hampstead. Three or four officers went there and met this board of consisting of a psychiatrist, a doctor, and one or two other officers. And we stayed there two nights, three nights. And I suppose they were having a look at you to see what sort of chap you were. And then they asked one what one wanted to do. Well, I wanted to get an active job again as soon as I possibly could. And I said that what I really wanted to do is to get this job as a OC troops on a ship. Well, they said, oh, well, that's very, very difficult. There's not many going like that. I said, well, I want something active anyway, which rather surprised them, I think, because I'm quite sure half the chaps there wanted either to get a real backwater job or else to get out of the army altogether. Anyway, it was left that they did let me know if anything likely turned up. Well, fortunately, I hung on and I said I wouldn't accept this and I wouldn't accept that. But I wanted a job worth doing. And rather out of the blue, I suddenly got a telephone call to report to someone in London. Can't remember who it was now. And I was asked immediately, how would you like the job of being assistant welfare officer with rank of lieutenant colonel and being responsible for all the welfare of all the troops when we go into Berlin? Well, I was so surprised and very glad to hear of this that I hardly knew what to say from her. But of course I said, I'd like to do that very much. Sounds fine. And thereupon it was settled. And I jumped up a couple of ranks rather quickly, which was all nice. And I was told to report to the Welfare Services headquarters in London. Now, I can't remember an awful lot of details as to what happened, but I was interviewed with the senior welfare officer who told me that there was an organization known as the Plans Group G, which was going to go into Berlin, and it was going to be responsible for the organization of the occupying English troops there. Well, the upshot of it was that I went by air to Brussels. I there was had an interview with the senior welfare officers of the 21st Army Group then, who were responsible for this Plans Group G. I found out what was expected of us, of the welfare service when we got to Berlin, and I came back to London having a fair idea of what was wanted. I was told I could collect a staff of my own choosing. I've forgotten exactly what the war establishment was, but it was about three or four officers and probably 10 or 12 other ranks, that kind of thing. It was a small body. Anyway, I then went having cast round and collected my team, as I like to call them. We went back, and we were immediately sent to Namur. And we were put into billets there, and the plans group G, that is the troops which were going to be responsible for the Berlin arrangements, were there, and I was told in more detail what was expected from us as welfare people to do.
Could you tell me what that was? Exactly?
Well, yes, it was. The thing was that we were going to occupy Berlin as soon as, mind you, the war hadn't finished then, but it was obviously drawing to a close, and we were going to have a considerable number of troops there, and they had got to be found some means of relaxation after from their military duties, such as canteens or clubs or swimming pools or expeditions, cinemas, hostels, all that kind of thing, and that had got to be set up in Berlin, which we thought would probably be in ruins, which is a pretty tough assignation. Anyway, we made our preliminary arrangements and tried to work out some sort of plan as to how we'd go about this. We had considerable facilities in the way of stores and all that kind of thing. After a time, we pushed on from Namur. We went to Bielefeld, which was the sort of Coventry of Germany. And it had been devastated. It was a terrible mess. On our way there, we went by road. We met streams of refugees, largely Germans, returning to the Ruhr and to the west after the retreat of the German army. Well, we were in Bielefeld for a time, and we began to get some idea as to how we could go about this job that we had to do in Berlin. And we got one or two things going. We could requisition buildings, for instance, and we got one or two places where we could set up a canteen, or we could run an entertainment party or something like that. And we managed to get together a number of fellows who could play musical instruments or had some sort of theatrical work, that kind of thing. And we worked up a sort of team. We then moved on from Bielefeld. We went, let me see, next to Brunswick. Most ghastly place. We were in the barracks there. Terrible place it was. They'd had displaced persons there who had left it in an awful mess. Anyway, we weren't there very long, and there were constant rumours going about as to when we should go into Berlin and how the war was going and so on and so forth. Well, the armistice was signed sometime, I think, while we were in Brunswick. May have been a little bit later. Anyway, it wasn't very long before we got definite orders to go into Berlin. By that time, the name of our thing had been changed. It was first of all known as a Berlin district, and then became known as Berlin area. And we were we felt that was a rather a better name than Plans Group G. However, it was on the 1st of July that we actually made the journey from I think it was from Brunswick to Berlin. It was a longish journey. We started at 4 a.m. in the morning, and it was a longish convoy. I suppose there must have been 100 vehicles of some sort. And we got as far as Madsberg. Now, Madsberg is on the Elbe, and at that time, the Americans had got no further than the River Elbe, and the Russians were the other side of it. Well, we went across the River Elbe on the Autobahn, and we got about... The head of our convoy, there were about 10 vehicles in front of us. I was in a small mini pickup thing with one of my officers, and there were about 10 vehicles in front of us, which got across the bridge. And when we were about to get over the bridge, in fact, we were about the middle, a young Russian lieutenant and a sentry advanced in the middle of the road. He held his hand up. The sentry pointed his tin rifle at us, and we stopped. Well, it wasn't quite what we were expecting. However, in the vehicle behind me, fortunately, was an officer who could speak some Russian. And he went to say, "This is perfectly all right. Why are you stopping us?" And the young Russian officer, lieutenant, said he had no vehicles were to go across that bridge at all. We produced papers to show that we were perfectly well allowed to go across. In fact, the order had been signed by Marshal Zhukov. Well, that made no impression on them at all, because apparently their chain of command is that unless they get permission from the person immediately above them, they can't do a damn thing. And for about 2 hours we stayed there. We got quite friendly with the little lieutenant, and we exchanged cigarettes, and we had photographs taken and all the rest of it, while the thing was argued out. Eventually, the whole convoy had to be collected and brought back. We went back over the bridge. We went into Madsberg and went across what is rather facetiously known as Friendship Bridge in Madsberg. And every vehicle was checked and God knows what. Anyway, that was it. But you see, half these Russians were illiterate anyway. And it was more than their job was worth to let anybody through, unless the person above them said they could. Anyway, we did eventually get going. And we continued our journey on to Berlin. Well, we got there sometime in the late afternoon, I suppose it would be. And the officer commanding the Berlin area, as it was then, was Brigadier Ravenhill. Now, he'd lived in Berlin for quite a long time before the war. He spoke Russian fluently, and he knew the place pretty well. And he went ahead, and we were just on the outskirts at Charlottenburg or somewhere there, on the outskirts of Berlin. Well, he went off himself to see where we could doss down for the night. We were only the advance party, and I can't remember what numbers we were, but not a great many. Anyway, he went to see where we could find accommodation. And what struck me as being so extraordinary, as we went into the suburbs of Berlin, the German people were obviously delighted to see us. It struck us as being extraordinary. We thought we should be met with sullen looks and fist shaking and that kind of thing. Not a bit of it. They threw flowers into our vehicles as we went along, delighted to see us. And of course the thing was that they'd had Russian troops in there for some long time, which had completely sacked the whole city. And you could see convoys of Russian vehicles carting stuff of all kinds out of the city. And they'd had a dreadful time, I think, from them. And they, when we got there, they thought, my God, now we should be free of this awful business. And the war was sort of over for them. Anyway, eventually Ravenhill came back and said the only place he could find for us to last down was at the Olympic Stadium, which had been built some years before when they held the Olympic Games there. Well, there we went, and it was in a filthy condition. Again, it had been occupied by displaced persons. It was absolutely foul and horrible. But still, we made the best of it. And that was our first night in Berlin. The commissary produced some sort of meal for us. I didn't think it was very appetizing, but still, we were glad to get anything, I suppose. Well, then our work began. I had two officers with me. John Scott was one, Lieutenant Scott from the Scots Guards, and the other was Captain Rice from the artillery. And he and I set out next morning with our maps. They'd all been issued with maps of Berlin, to try and find what houses or what buildings we could possibly use as canteens or what have you, or cinemas, theatres, anything of that kind, which had not been damaged too badly. The devastation was appalling.
Could you describe the scene?
Well, the people, the German people, were absolutely, utterly down. The country we'd been coming through wasn't too bad. Out in the country, not too bad. They hadn't suffered the bombing. But Berlin, I'd never seen anything like it. There was scarcely a house was not damaged. Masonry was scattered all over the place, as if it was the morning after a raid on London, so continuously. The Germans were simply craven. They were on their knees. They were really well beaten. And so, but eventually we found one or two possible places, and so that went on for one or two days. Now, I had power to requisition anything that I could find useful for my welfare purposes. First thing I did was to requisition a place where I could have an office. And I requisitioned quite a nice sort of house, which hadn't been much damaged, which belonged to an artist. And there we set up our headquarters. And then Scott and Rice and I, again, we went out into the city to try and find what we could, which was not too badly damaged. And that we did for the next several days. Now, Ravenhill, the brigadier, had said to me, now, I'm giving you every facility I can because I think welfare is a very important thing. You've got a caravan for your own private use. You can get about in that, or you can sleep in it, and that's your property while you're doing that job. What I want is to get a number of clubs, canteens, hostels, swimming pools, anything, or cinemas or theatres, anything like that going within 10 days of our arriving. Well, that was a pretty tall order. Got to be starting at map from scratch. However, we did in fact do that. And gradually the thing began to get into some sort of rhythm. And both Scott and Rice were marvellous, the amount of work we put in. We were working a very long day. We were up very early in the morning, and we got to bed very late at night. But we felt we were really doing something useful. One or two of the highlights were that we requisitioned all the boats on the Havelsee, which is a big lake on the outskirts of Berlin. Now, there, part of it was in the American sector, but by working pretty quickly, we were able to collar all the boats there, requisition them for the use of our chaps. Now, that was a godsend to them, and they could swim there and whatever. A number of cinemas we got round to, which had not been damaged. We got a concert party together from our own men who had some kind of ability in that way. And Rice, it was Rice's particular job to do that side. And he got a jolly good band going. And they would go and play at a theatre or something like that. And the men of the Berlin area were only too delighted to have a little relaxation like that. And we obviously were doing a good job. Another thing we were able to requisition was a store, I think it was, where there were an enormous number of wireless sets. And I requisitioned 1,000 of these sets so that we could supply, and my ambition was to supply every barrack room in the city with a wireless set. And we had previously had 30, which was supposed to be a very adequate thing. But, well, anyway, it enabled them to get some idea of what was going on. Later, I requisitioned the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra with a matter of 70 or 80 performers. My ambition was to get some really good concerts going. And after a time, I was able to do that. And we had regular concerts on Sundays in the middle of Berlin, played by this Philharmonic Orchestra. And it was magnificent. The place was crammed. How people got there, I don't know. But they did. And they appreciated that good classical music, I think, even more than the ordinary sort of music hall stuff. But the point was that we were doing what we were supposed to do, and that was to provide good relaxation for these chaps. Round about that time, the non-fraternization rule was relaxed, and then people were allowed to speak to Germans. Otherwise, we were not allowed to speak to them at all in a public place. Well, I don't know that it made all that much difference, because we were, none of us liked the German civilian population. We thought we were a despicable lot. We couldn't bear the sight of them. But that was a bit of a relaxation. But another thing we got going was a thing called I think of the Welfare Bulletin, which is a kind of paper which we published eventually every day, giving news of what was happening, world events, what was happening with our own immediate neighbourhood and so on and so forth. And that went down jolly well. And it took a good deal to... We got to get it printed by a German printer, which we did. And we got it distributed. And I think I was very welcome, because, you see, newspapers... nobody's seen a newspaper for weeks and weeks. And we didn't really know much what was going on, except an occasional wireless or rumours. Rumours, of course, were all over the place. And people appreciated that. I think they felt that they were in the picture more. And eventually, I reckon we did our job. And then I got one or two expeditions going out to various parts outside Berlin, and arranged parties to go out there. And all that helped. But it it was an intensely interesting, very exhausting, but very satisfying job to have done.
Did you do any of the, what we might call conventional welfare work, looking after the men's welfare in the sense of family problems at home,
no,
that sort of thing?
No, we were joined in Berlin by a number of voluntary organisations, such as SAFA. You know about SAFA?
No.
The SAFA is Soldiers and Sailors Families Association, which existed for the purpose of looking after the soldier's family when he was abroad. Now, we had a number of organisations like that. We had the YMCA came out, the YWCA came out, the Church of Scotland, Catholic Women's League, a number of things like that. And they set up their own headquarters when I had to find buildings for them, which I did. And we worked very closely together. And they looked after that kind of thing. They got church services going and that sort of thing, which is outside my scope. But my chief job, really, was to find buildings which could be occupied for that purpose. And
How did you feel that the troops were happy with the arrangements you'd made? Did you feel that they felt there was enough?
Oh, I think so, yes, because they turned up in large numbers, you see, to go on these expeditions, to go to these concerts, to listen to these wireless sets that I got for them, and for this using the Halversey Lake. And we commandeered a steamboat which used to ply on the lake, and we called it the Southend Belle. And I remember Mary Churchill, when Mr. Churchill came over for the Potsdam conference, Mary Churchill came with him, and she came and christened the ship, and we had a little party there and all that kind of thing. I found a store of what looked like very valuable pictures, which happened to be in the American sector. But I was just in time to rescue a whole lot from there, which I think, I'm not sure, it hadn't been a store which had been collected by Goering. And I got a lot of these pictures away and put into the various buildings that we got to decorate and make them look a bit more homely. And that was a bit of luck.
Did you have any contact with the Russians?
Well, yes, we did. They were very difficult to get on with. Pleasant enough if you had a party with them or anything like that. But when it came down to brass tacks, they were very, very difficult. I remember on one occasion we had to set up, I think, a new route for some telephone wires. And at that time, we had to submit our plans to the Russians as to what we were going to do, which is fair enough, I suppose. So we submitted a detailed and very carefully worked out plan of exactly where this telephone lines were to go. The Russians said, oh, thank you very much for your plan. That's very interesting.